This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
NFL teams facing do-or-die off-seasons. Welcome to the show. It's the Maggie and Perloff Show. Perloff still on vacation in Costa Rica, so executive producer EJ Stewart now slides over to co-host with me today. EJ, good morning. How are
you? Good morning, Maggie. What's happening?
Okay, so it kind of feels like there are a couple NFL teams who are really facing off-seasons that can go one of two directions. Mm-hmm. Either they handle their business and they become championship contenders full-on,
yep.
Or they have an offseason where either they sort of flit around the margins or don't go all in or what have you, and then they could find themselves literally in last place in their division. So let me start it off. If you're asking me who has got a do-or-die offseason in front of them, look no further than your San Francisco 49ers. This was a season that they're coming off of, EJ, that just was disaster from jump.
Yep.
And when I say that, I mean the offseason. It was stuff they could control, like contract negotiations that went south with Brandon Ayuk and things that got drawn out, as the 49ers always do, it feels like.
Yep.
And then it was some things that were just like sort of tragic, you know, with Ricky Pearsall getting shot. Thankfully, he's fine. And some other really tragic things that sort of, you know, checkered their season and off season. And while you can never, you know, predict when some tragedy is going to strike, you know, this is a team that has been to the Super Bowl and was a mainstay to at least the NFC Championship game. Like, a 49ers season doesn't even start until the divisional round. But look at what happened last year. They literally come in dead last.
Yeah.
I mean, behind the Cardinals in the NFC West. Like, that is not where you want to be. And injuries played a big role. But you've got Brock Purdy with a, you know, big contract. Yeah. This guy's due to make the biggest raise, like, in the history of the NFL. He's just coming off a deal where he had 4 years, $3.7 million. That's like, and backup quarterbacks make three times that much. And
people in this industry that make more money than that.
Yeah, right. He's not making much than the guys down the hall.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be honest, like, they've got to figure out, where are you going to go with Purdy?
Sure.
I don't think he's taking some gigantic discount just because he was Mr. Irrelevant. He's played to the point where he deserves to be paid like a top quarterback, if you believe that.
Yeah.
And that's not the only other issues. You know, you talk about a team that needs to address deficiencies. I'm talking about the 49ers now. On the offensive line, pass rush, and running back, three places you have invested heavily in already. So, to me, crazy offseason for the 49ers, feels do or die, and, you know, as easily as they could be back as championship contenders, I think they go into like a malaise. And then, are we talking about a team trading for Kyle Shanahan? Mm. Are we talking about finally breaking up the brain trust? It just feels like there's so much at stake for the 49ers, do or die offseason.
So this may sound harsh talking about the 49ers in this way, but can you be do or die when you're already dead?
Oh boy.
I mean, I really look at the 49ers. I said this was going to be a setback for them. It somehow went worse than even I expected. I kind of wonder if the 49ers' run as being the big dogs of the NFC is just kind of over. So I wonder if we're kind of moved past the 49ers. But it is an important offseason, no question. I'm looking at a team that I think things will fundamentally change for either the better in a great way or in a terrible way for the worse. And I'm looking at the Cincinnati Bengals. Because to me, when you look at teams in terms of just pure contract disputes, is there any other team that has three of their best four players in massive contract
like
disputes?
Like half the team.
Yeah, I mean, one guy's now going to be a franchise tag, but essentially you had two free agents in T. Higgins and Trey Henderson, and then you have this massive contract dispute you're going to have with Ja'Marr Chase, who already was showing that he was frustrated last year. He didn't want to do anything in practice, didn't want to do anything in training camp. He was not taking that contract dispute sitting down lightly.
Yeah.
That is going to be a real big situation because are they going to be able to keep all these guys? The reporting yesterday was that they are working in terms of trying to figure it out. Maybe they listened to Pardon My Take and they listened to Joe Burrow. Like, oh, maybe they got some ideas there.
Yeah, Joe laid out basically how you lower his cap hit. Like, is this your job?
Yeah, I know. Maybe he should get, you know, assistant GM role for the Cincinnati Bengals. But it sounds like they're trying to find a way to make it work to fit all these three guys in there. I find it very hard to believe they're going to be able to do that. And if they don't do that, if they're not able to keep two or all these guys, or if they lose two of these guys, which I think is very possible with Higgins and Hendrickson, the Bengals are taking a massive step back. And that's where I look at Joe Burrow. Because I know we look at Joe Burrow, he's Mr. Ohio, he's been a great team leader. Joe Burrow is also a killer.
Yeah.
To me, Joe Burrow, I call him the Iceman. I know we have Iceman George Gervin. I think that if there's anybody who deserves that title in terms of today's athlete, I think Joe Burrow absolutely deserves that. Not because of the ice and the chains. I mean just of who he is when he steps on the football field. Is he really going to be taking this, sitting down, the Bengals messing around with whether or not they want to pay Trey Henderson, whether or not they want to pay Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? I think that if they have a situation where they have to move on from a lot of these guys, he's going to be very unhappy.
You also saw some fractures a little bit, firing Lou Anarumo, you know, parting with the defensive coordinator that, like, had, you thought, the secret sauce to stop the Chiefs. Turns out it was the Eagles who actually had the secret sauce, the not-so-secret sauce to stop the Chiefs.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, the Bengals are another team. I say 49ers, you say Bengals, that are going into a do-or-die offseason. And, you know, if I can give you my two cents on the Bengals, stop lying to Joe Burrow.
Mm.
Stop stringing him along as the front office if you are telling him that we're going to sign all three of these guys. And I'm not saying that they couldn't do some kind of weird cap gymnastics to get everybody under and sign.
Right.
I'm just asking, is this the best way to build a team?
Mm.
So you're going to be paying Joe Burrows at the top of the market. You're going to pay a T. Higgins, who's a franchise tag. By the way, guys, the second franchise tag.
Yes.
So it's only 1 year, but it's still a high number because it basically, it basically doubles. Or whatever.
It increases, yeah.
And then you have Ja'Marr Chase, who only in this world wants one thing, to be paid one penny more than Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
These guys are the biggest frenemies of all time. LSU, you know, they have a competition that we're just not going to be able to understand. And that's what he wants, and that's what he said last year.
Mm-hmm.
He came and said, just pay me a little bit more than Justin Jefferson. They didn't do it, so what did he do? He went out and had one of the best statistical seasons a wide receiver can have.
I'm always open.
So now you're going to have to pay him more. So congrats. You played the Jerry Jones playbook, and you waited, and then you played yourself, and now you're going to have to pay him more. And then Trey Hendrickson, we talk about this even with the Cowboys. I know they're not in this conversation, although big offseason for them too.
For sure.
Is it smart to have this much wrapped up in three or four guys? Is that the best way to actually build a football team? So they got to stop lying to Joe Burrow because nobody in their right mind thinks that the Bengals, of all people, are going to be able to get all these guys signed at the top of the market.
And that's my big concern for the Bengals, that last point of, does it even make sense to have all this money wrapped into these guys, especially when you're not a team that's won a Super Bowl. This year you had all those guys and you didn't make the playoffs. Do you trust Mike Brown? Do you trust the Bengals front office to figure out what life is like post a T. Higgins and Trey Hendrickson departure or post another massive contract dispute with Ja'Marr Chase that maybe fits itself into the regular season? Maybe if you don't get a contract, maybe he doesn't step on the field week one. I would not trust that front office as far as I can throw them. I know this maybe generation of fan may not be quite as familiar with Bengal ineptitude. Trust me, you'll get familiar very fast this offseason when they have to deal with these three guys. So that would be the biggest thing, too, is if they're in a situation where they decide they have to move on, do I think that they can make the right moves to try to rebound from this? I don't think so. I think this is their nucleus, whether do or die, whether hook by crook. They got to find a way to make it work with these guys. If they have the situation where they have to rebound this thing or change things up, I don't have a lot of confidence they'll put a team around Joe Burrow that can actually get over the hump and beat Pat Mahomes and get to the Super Bowl.
Well, and here's the thing. We're talking about which NFL teams are heading into do-or-die off seasons, and EJ's saying the Bengals, I think the 49ers, but let's just talk about another aspect of the Bengals that the 49ers don't generally have to deal with, which is their off seasons tend to bleed into the regular season. And I know it feels like the NFL regular season goes on for about 100 years now with the 17 games, but you can't keep getting off to these terrible starts. And it came back to bite them because this year you're, you know, a win here, a win there. You're into the playoffs as opposed to sitting at home because you lost to the Patriots earlier in the season at home. Yes. Or you blew games that you never should have.
It's 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Zach Taylor special.
Yeah, they always start the year terrible. And because we have so much confidence in Joe Burrow and that offense, we feel like, well, they could figure it out because in his second year, they went to that Super Bowl.
Yep.
Then they went to the AFC Championship game. And they've been given, in some ways, they're similar to the 49ers in the sense that I feel like they've been given championship pedigree that they haven't earned. Mm. There's been a lot of this talk about, well, the Bengals, don't worry about them. They'll figure it out. Which, again, as of me remembering the Bengal history, I'm like, are we talking about the same franchise? The Bengals will figure it out? What are we talking about here? The 49ers had a lot of that as well, where it was like, well, things are bad in offseason. Things are bad off the field, but they'll figure it out. These are not teams that have won championships. They don't have that pedigree. They don't have that experience. So I think both of these teams need these offseason to go as straightforward as possible. I think there's a chance for the 49ers that could happen because if they just decide to pay Brock Purdy, then that's the decision and they move on. I think with the Bengals, it's going to get complicated almost no matter what.
Yep, it definitely will. 855-212-4227. So we're asking you who is facing a do-or-die offseason for the NFL where it could really go both directions. And I think why you and I pick both the 49ers and the Bengals is that when it goes right, you see how right it can go.
Yeah.
When it goes wrong, literally talk about last place.
Yep.
You know, because I was thinking about a different team here, like the Dallas Cowboys, for example. And, you know, nobody wants to hear Jerry talk anymore about all in or whatever. But it's like, all right, say the Cowboys have another meh offseason. And I think they're already off to that start because Brian Schottenheimer didn't exactly light the world on fire.
Yep.
But really, what's the floor and what's the ceiling? You know, is it that much variance? You know, like the floor is kind of like they win 7 games and don't make the playoffs. And I think the ceiling is like they win 10 games and they get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. It doesn't feel like a wild swing. The Bengals, the pendulum could go either way. The 49ers, the pendulum could go either way. So it feels like there's just a little bit more urgency. We're also talking about windows kind of being open and closed with both the Bengals and the 49ers. I think the Cowboys window is kind of like cracked. But no one's kicking it down, you know.
This is not Biggie kicking the door, waving the 4-4. This is not that happening.
No one's going to ever mistake that. No one's rapping about the Cowboys, let's put it that way. I think that's probably how you know you've fallen off as America's team. Pop culture references to Dallas. I don't even remember the last time they got name-checked in anything.
Yeah, this feels...
John Stockton got name-checked by Kendrick Lamar at the Super Bowl. The guy hasn't suited up in 25 years.
This feels as irrelevant as the Cowboys have been to me since, like, the Dave Campo era. Like, Chan Gailey. Like, in the theory, you were looking at this offseason, a season where you had at least playoff aspirations. I don't know about super aspirations, but you would think a season where you expected to at least win the NFC East again, and you flop tremendously. And there's no urgency from the team, and the fans are so checked out. It's like the Cowboys, in some ways, it feels like almost like they don't exist.
I know.
Like, they're not part of the conversations about who's going to make a big leap. We're talking about the Niners and the Bengals trying to get back to that spot. Or we talked yesterday about the Chiefs. We talked so much about the Eagles. Like, the Cowboys aren't even in the stratosphere of these teams.
Now, the Eagles and the Commanders are way more interesting in terms of the division. Then we'll see what happens with the Giants. If somehow the Giants land Shedeur Sanders, well, suddenly we're going to be talking about the Giants a lot more. So that's kind of interesting, too. But we're asking you who's facing do-or-die off-seasons in the NFL. Man, if we can put that up at Maggie and Pearl on X, just... do or die offseason. Who is it? ... You tell us. There's a couple other candidates that we want to talk about in terms of how they go about their business this offseason, but we turn it to you. 855-212-4227. Get involved in the show today. It's Wednesday, which means we do the great debate around here. Comes your way at 8 o'clock Eastern time. It's a fun one.
Can't wait for this one.
It's a good one. We rip these things kind of like loosely based on the news, and so I love where this one went. It's a great idea by you, EJ, and we're going to take it in a very fun way. So that happens at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Coming up next hour, Andy Staples is going to join us, talk about all the potential shakeups in college football that we touched on yesterday with the Big Ten and the SEC really flexing their muscles. reportedly, and giving themselves maybe 4 automatic bids into a future college football playoff. So basically, they're just going to own the bracket. Again, 855-212-4227. The NFL team with the most do-or-die offseason is who? Let us know. Kind of a shocking moment yesterday. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Usually here, he's on vacation, a well-deserved one. So EJ, the EP, slides over, which means Manny's producing the show now. Alex is here. Pat will be in with updates. Everyone's just sort of musical chairsing this thing. But I was a little surprised. Full disclosure, I've not really been watching the Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy golf thing.
Like 99% of America.
Well, you know, I like to give things a chance, yeah. But, you know, indoor simulator golf, you know, I don't know. Not really one of my hobbies, but I'm not going to yuck your yums. If you like it, good for you. So yesterday, Tiger Woods is playing in this event, yep. I guess, and he's about to line up this the shot on the simulator. So you do like all the drives and everything, and everything in the fairways is all on a simulator. Then you actually putt on a green. Yep. It's in like a big sort of, what do they call, Top Golf kind of looking place?
Yeah.
And so he's about to line up, and he asked them, how far to the pin? And he swears that they told him 99 yards. So he brings out a wedge. Turns out it was actually 199 to the pin. So here's Tiger Woods after explaining the mishap to Marty Smith.
Greatest of all time, Tiger Woods, is still attempting to analyze what the hell just happened. But at least you can smile.
No, I heard 99 yards. And so I went out there and hit it 100 yards. And one of the most embarrassing moments in my golfing career just happened.
Sure about that?
Nothing's happened to him.
One of the most in the golfing career? I mean, if that just spans like most of Tiger's life... There's a couple other things that I can think of that maybe raise the bar a little bit. I don't think misreading 199 for 99 is the same as, you know, Perkins waitress. Like, well, Maggie, there's a couple really big gaffes that Tiger's made here.
Well, Maggie, no, you don't understand. When he meant golfing career, he meant simulator golfing yeah, career.
Right. He meant his TGL yeah. career, which started about 4 days ago.
Yeah, in the last four days, this is one of the most embarrassing moments he's ever had. Which, who could argue that?
Yeah, I know. Well, what am I thinking? He's got to understand, when you say something like that, it's going to raise some eyebrows.
Of
like,
course.
Does your golfing career also include when your wife took a 9-iron out of your golfing bag and smashed the back of your car with it because it turned out that you were basically sleeping with everyone in the lower 48 states? Give or take yeah. a couple ladies?
Ah, oh, Heldrick.
I mean, I want to give Tiger a little bit of a pass here. I know his mom just passed away, so I'm not trying to be insensitive. But you can't say this is the most embarrassing thing that's happened when you were basically the tabloid staple for like a good 2.5 years.
I told you this before the show. I think that when you have the level of scandal that Tiger had, I think you kind of have to operate as if that never happened.
Like none of us know anything.
Yeah, like none of us know anything. Because like if you have to live with that and think about that and have that be at the forefront of every golf conversation you have, I mean, would you want to live under a rock somewhere? Like, could you really show your face in some ways? Like, so I that sense, I kind of got why he kind of just blocks that right out of his yeah. mind, as if that doesn't exist. He doesn't want anyone bringing that up or reminding him of that at this point in his life.
Yeah, listen, I think you get to, you know, also there's like, is there a statute of limitations on this stuff?
Sure.
But to be honest, I mean, it's one of the biggest, like, at the time, falls from grace that we had seen in sports without someone doing something like criminal.
Definitely.
You know, and it was not criminal. It was just like his own personal life. But yeah, to say this was one of the most embarrassing moments of my golfing career, I was like, I don't know. I don't even think it really cracks the top 10. But there's another yeah. part of this too, which is also an impressive part, where he thought it was 99 yards to the pin. He takes out a wedge and just nails 100 yards. Like, it's just, he can do it in his sleep.
It shows you that there's always going to be some talent there. But looking at Tiger doing this simulator thing and thinking about the next time he'll step on a green, are we not over this Tiger Woods thing? Have we not moved past
this?
This
thing? His
yeah,
career?
I mean, and maybe that saying this thing maybe kind of trivializes what is the greatest golf career ever, in my opinion. So I know I have no beef with Tiger Woods in that regard. But I do support watching athletes in their prime. And I don't like seeing, you know, Willie Mays stumbling out in the outfield in Shea Stadium at the end of his career. You know, I don't appreciate seeing, you know, Johnny Unitas playing for the Chargers. Like, I want to see guys go out on top. I want, or at least with some kind of dignity. And seeing Tiger Woods doing this thing, and then seeing whatever's going to happen over the course of this year if he does decide to play in multiple majors, we know what's coming. There's not going to be a resurgence where Tiger's going to step out and he's going to challenge for a title somewhere or somehow turn the clock back and win a championship. I would love to see Tiger Woods go and do a podcast or be an analyst. I want to hear him talk.
Do a podcast.
I want to hear him talk about the game. I want to hear
private person of all time.
He
has
one of the greatest golfing minds and really athletic minds ever to grace our earth. Like, there's so much he could be giving, I think, to us that it doesn't include him stepping on the green and golfing.
Okay. I don't think that Tiger is the kind of person who, like, I don't see his future post-golf, whatever that looks like. It's not, let's put it this way. It's not going to be the Kelce brothers, all right? Like, I don't see him, you know, I think he believes doing stuff like this TGL simulator golf thing or whatever is his giving back to the game in a way, right? You create new revenue streams for other golfers, create something to watch while it's like, you know, while you're in between tournaments, and, you know, he probably makes a couple bucks on the side too, so that doesn't hurt. But I don't see him being this, like, I don't say ambassador to the game, but I don't see him doing media. I don't see him even attempting, like, what Tom Brady is trying to do. Yeah. I don't see any of that stuff because I think Tiger is so wildly private, and maybe it's because people like me make jokes anytime he says, this is one of the most embarrassing things that happened in my career, and I bring up, you know, I bring up the old stuff. He doesn't want to subject himself to those slings and arrows. I don't know, but I don't see him being out there. Now, as far as him competing, listen, there's always going to be a little glimmer of hope because he is Tiger. But the second part is golf is different than Johnny Unitas. Like, it's you can kind of dip in and dip out of golf, whereas if you're an older athlete playing football, say Travis Kelce or something, or whoever's thinking about hanging it up, we got to put you through 17 games plus the plus the playoffs. Right. Golf, you can just sort of a la carte
but Maggie,
a little bit more.
Maggie, the amount of injuries and damage that's been done to Tiger Woods' body, he might as well be Johnny Unitas. Yeah. Like, the amount of injuries, the punishment he's taken, like, he's basically wrapped together in bubble wrap and, you know, in shoestring.
Titanium.
Yeah, like, and literal metal. Like, that is how his legs and body's been put together. He's went through so many injuries. And the role I kind of foresee Tiger Woods is the role that we saw Kobe Bryant occupying before his death. Kobe Bryant, you know, making movies, talking about the game, you know, going on various podcasts, really being an ambassador, really kind of allowing the fans to kind of see maybe the greatness in the current athletes. He was one of these guys. He's not like some of these older players currently who talk about the NBA. He was really bigging up a lot of the current guys and really being a mentor to these guys.
Totally. Golf, the Devin Bookers, the Jason Tatum, stuff like that.
Golf is in a situation where a lot of casual fans like myself, like, we can't attach ourselves to these current guys because we came in with Tiger and that's all we wanted to see. If Tiger Woods could be that middleman to say, hey, this is the new generation, these are the guys you should be following, and him kind of wrapping his arms around these guys, I think that would be very beneficial to golf. This is like a short fix. I think Tiger would keep going out there every 3 or 4 months and, you know, do a couple rounds, say he can't go anymore because he's too banged up, and then go home. We think, oh man, Tiger Woods, that was kind of a waste. If he was actually not part of the actual game, but instead kind of being in that ambassador role, I think that would actually, for golf, it'd be a much more of a long-term benefit for the sport than what he's doing now.
I think it would come off as phony because I just don't think it's him. You know, it wouldn't be authentic. I don't think. Maybe he's got a new, maybe we get a Tiger Woods like 4.0 and there's a new version of him. I think, to be honest, I think we get more of like a LeBron Bronny situation where it's him with his son, Charlie. And that's kind of like the next part of Tiger Woods. We see him kind of coaching his son and navigating. Now, it's not a Bronny situation where
we all love Bronny and LeBron.
No. I don't think you can fake it. Like, you can't, you know, I don't think Tiger can just get his kid on the tour. Right? Like, he's got to actually make the cut.
I didn't think you could just get a kid into the NBA, but then LeBron proved me otherwise, so I have no idea.
If it was a PGA draft, you know, then maybe Tiger could I guess, pull some strings. But no, I mean, Charlie Woods is going to have to really earn it on
the golf simulator league? Do they have a lottery? How does that work?
I don't know. Something tells me he could compete in that one. 855-212-4227. Get a little Tiger Woods. His flub yesterday where he thought it was 199 to the pin. He thought it was 99 yards to the pin. It was 199. He calls it the most embarrassing moment of his golf career. I don't know. got a few others just off the top of the dome. Pat Boyle is here with us doing updates this morning. What up, Patty?
Morning. How are we doing?
You know,
we
doing
are,
good.
We're sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Let's start with some big football news from yesterday. The biggest free agent allegedly, reportedly off the board, Andy Dalton.
Even talking about it without Perloff here feels like we're cheating on Perloff. This is his guy.
Yeah. Red Rifle is reportedly staying as Bryce Young's mentor with the Panthers. Carolina's re-signing him. He's 37 years old, 2-year contract.
Sheesh.
Yeah, Schefter reporting the contract is worth $8 million, includes $6 million guaranteed, and has a max value of $10
million. Ain't no better job in the NFL or in life than being the backup quarterback to an NFL team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he might get in a little
bit,
though.
Problem, though. Is this the backup job you want? Because this is the job where you may have to play multiple games and take punishment behind a Panthers offensive line, right? Which actually was actually okay last year, but
yeah,
that's the only thing, though.
That kind of worked out perfectly. He got in there. Bryce Young, we're like, wow, this kid's career is over already. Dalton's maybe thinking, I'm going to start the rest of the year. Starts a handful of games, plays well. Bryce Young comes back in, kills it.
Yep.
And it's like Andy Dalton's getting all the credit for this.
Yeah, you know, it's weird how he lost the job, too, because he got into a car accident.
Yeah.
So it's not like he lost the job because all of a sudden Bryce Young was showing him something in practice. And it's a credit to Young that he came in and actually did play well. He also gets a little bit of an assist, the fact that this is not a good draft class for quarterbacks.
Definitely.
I don't think he has to look over his shoulder like he may have. If this was last year's class, he'd be out.
Can you imagine that, though? Like, Bryce Young's like, my career's done. And then I'm not, like, making a joke out of it because he was okay. But, like,
yeah.
Hey, yeah, Andy, right. Thanks for getting in that car accident and injuring your thumb. Because now I'm going to save my career.
Crazy sliding doors. Because, like, does Bryce Young ever get back on the field? And it's the Panthers, so who knows what the hell they're thinking.
Yeah, Bryce Young's not on the Panthers, I think, if Andy Dalton finishes that season. I think that you're looking at him somewhere else as a backup.
I was going to say Sam Darnold sweepstakes, but they already went down that road.
Right.
Retread that one.
They went down the Sam Darnold sweepstakes, the Baker Mayfield sweepstakes.
Yeah, maybe Kirk Cousins, I guess, feels like next. Anyway, they don't have to do that now.
There is a sick irony that besides the 49ers, every team Sam Darnold played needs a quarterback and in theory probably should consider him but can't because he was already there. The Jets, the Panthers.
And it because it ended badly.
Right.
With him getting benched and moved on in both places.
Okay. I'm going to ask what may sound like a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it out loud. Is it really that bad for either team to just bring Sam Darnold back? He's a better player than he was when he was there. Why is it just off the table for the Jets or the Panthers to just bring back Sam Darnold, considering he put together a Pro Bowl caliber season, he's played well? Like, is it purely just because you can't go back to your ex after they've blown up? Usually when you go back.
I think you know why it's off the table for the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets is definitely off the table. By the way, I don't think Geno Smith is off the table to come back with the Jets. I thought that maybe you could work out something where he comes and plays for the Jets. I think that enough water is under the bridge for that. Here's why Sam Darnold can't go back to the Jets. Because they basically went into a season where they knew they were executing a full tank. Put him behind a sieve of an offensive line and said, go lose so that we can have a shot at Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. Have at it, buddy.
They couldn't even execute the tank correctly.
And Thanks, Greg Williams.
Yeah, they basically just went out and said, you know, like, please go lose. We're not going to tell you this. But
so you think he would never want to go
I don't think
back.
He would ever. And I know it's a different GM now. But I don't think he would ever want to do that. Also, just working for Woody Johnson doesn't feel like a picnic. And then Carolina.
What makes you say that?
That was supposed to be his, I don't know, ask his sons. That's supposed to be like his redemption. And I think he got benched two different times.
Yeah, they put Cam Newton in at one point.
I mean.
Which was crazy, by the way.
Yeah, actually, like, no thanks. If I'm Darnold, no shot.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, some coaching news. Kellen Moore and the Saints reportedly have their offensive coordinator, Doug Nussmeier. This will be his first NFL coordinator job, although he did have that role in the NCAA at Florida, Michigan, Alabama, Washington, and Fresno State. But Nussmeier has basically been attached to Kellen Moore's hip the last few years. He was the Cowboys QB coach, Chargers, and then the Eagles, all while Moore was the OC at those places. By the way, speaking of coaches, we have some betting odds on who will be the coach of the year in 2025. Can you guys guess who the co-favorites are?
I saw this, so I know, and I'm officially fading one of these guys.
You're going to fade Ben Johnson.
I'm fading Ben Johnson, who, along with
Mike Vrabel.
Okay. Ben Johnson, who hasn't called a coin flip in the NFL, and Mike Vrabel, now the co-betting favorites to win coach of the year. Listen, Ben Johnson might be the next, you know, Bill Walsh, and I'll eat my words. This dude hasn't done anything yet. he's going to a much worse team in the Chicago Bears, who play outside with a quarterback who's got way more influence than you ever will. And we think that this is going to just be snap of the fingers awesome. To think that he's not going to have any growing pains as a head coach, to me, is setting him up to fail. Like, he's going to go through trials and tribulations just like every other first-time guy.
I mean, Vegas is not usually in the business of losing money, but I did not understand these favorites. The way you feel about Ben Johnson, which you make great points, I would not pick him as one of my top guys. That's how I feel about Mike Vrabel. I mean, the Patriots, unless they foresee a Patriot team that has a lot of cap room making just crazy moves this offseason and overturning their roster and turning them into a playoff caliber team, the Patriots stink. Like, they still stink. And this idea that Mike Vrabel, who will not have Derrick Henry to just hand the ball off to 40 times to just milk the clock, that he's going to take a second-year quarterback and turn them into a 10-win team, because that's what it's going to take to win Coach of the Year. You're not going to win Coach of the Year winning eight games, nine games, seven games, which will be a massive improvement for the Patriots, by the way.
Yeah, they're coming off back-to-back four-win seasons. Like, although, I think Drake May is really good.
He's got to win six more games at least to even be in the conversation for Coach of the Year. And that seems just completely off the board for me. So I don't understand how he's in this situation. I would fade Mike Vrabel when it comes to Coach of the Year.
At least there's a little proof of concept with Vrabel, though. Like, well, he can run a team.
And then, you know, watch him spend $100 million in free agency this year. And then,
or they trade for Myles Garrett or something, right? But and I think May is good. But you're right. Like, you win four games. If they won seven games, wouldn't we say, wow, that's a really big upgrade? You won three more games this year.
Yeah, and you're getting Coach of the Year votes for that? I don't see that. That's never happened. What's the least amount of wins a guy has won for Coach of the Year? It can't be less than nine.
I can check, but here's something worth mentioning. You know who has the longest odds to win Coach of the Year next year?
Oh, Schottenheimer.
No.
Brian Dable.
Both Andy Reid and Nick Sirianni. The two Super Bowl head coaches.
Yeah, the bar is so high.
You're telling me if Andy Reid wins, let's say Patrick Mahomes misses like eight games next year, and they go 12-5, he's not winning Coach of the Year?
No. I don't know if they – yeah, I don't think they give it to the – to the guy who's like the established guy. They always are looking for the big improvement dude, like Kevin O'Connell.
But then that kind of makes the award a joke. You should give it to the guy who does the best.
It's already a joke, Pat. Matt Nagy won it. I mean,
well, Matt Nagy won, what was that, the year when he went 12 games with Mitch Trubisky? Fair. That was the coach of the century for that joke.
You know, good point. He was just the first one that came to mind. I mean, didn't Dable win it?
Yes.
Yes, he did, yeah.
It's a death knell. You don't want this award.
You don't want that award.
Yeah. Who won it? Who won it the year after? Oh, it was Stefanski again, right?
For the second time? Yeah, he's a two-time. A guy's squarely on the hot seat, I think. I don't know.
He shouldn't be. He's a very good coach, but
Anyone who co-signed on Deshaun Watson should be feeling very, very nervous.
I get that. I don't know if it was him, though.
I stood up there and said, I love it.
I know, but I think you have no choice but to.
I think that's Jimmy and D. Haslam saying, oh, I'm sorry, how much would you like your check to be this time, coach? Yeah, that's right. Keep saying what we want you to say.
Man, what a disaster.
I got more football for you guys, but big night of college hoops last night. How about a historic blowout in Provo?
Step back three for Yegor. Why not? There it is. Yegor Devin, his first three. The Cougs have their 12th, and it's BYU by what? 31!
Yeah, BYU Damn. Sports Network, the call. The Cougars annihilate number 23 Kansas, 91-57. The 34-point defeat tied for the biggest under Coach Bill Self. Here's the legendary coach himself.
Well, I thought we were awful, and I thought they were great.
Agreed.
I think BYU could have beat anybody tonight. They were great. And then we didn't do anything to make them play less than great.
Yeah.
BYU could have beat the 86 Celtics tonight. Could have beat the 2000 Lakers. Yeah, I don't know about that.
65 Celtics, BYU.
24-25 Knicks.
Taking the Cougars. Oh, gosh.
Kansas,
they're in trouble, man.
Yeah, Kansas loses back-to-back games for the first time this year. Elsewhere, Gators chomping in the swamp.
Outside to Clayton with seven to shoot. Pump fake from three, deep three. Good! Oh my gosh! How does he do that?
Gator Sports Network from Learfield, the call. That was a logo three from Walter Clayton Jr. He has his second of the game, so he's doing his best Steph Curry impression. He finished with 18 points. Second-ranked Florida crushed Oklahoma 85-63. Just a couple of other ones. Fifth-ranked Houston went on the road, beat Arizona State 80-65. And Mississippi State, number 21 in the country, they took down seventh-ranked Texas A&M 70-54. NBA returns tonight. Lakers versus Hornets in L.A., makeup game from early January with the wildfires. LeBron questionable with the foot injury that kept him out of the All-Star game, which, by the way, not to pile on, I know it's a couple of days late here, and I'm a huge NBA fan, but
yeah.
After watching what the guys in the Four Nations Face-Off tournament did for the NHL, LeBron waits all the way until about an hour before tip-off and says,
Yeah.
90 minutes, hurts. Pat. 90 minutes.
I have a theory on this. I think he saw the run of show finally and said, I'm sorry, this is going to last 3.5 hours and we're going to be stopping this many times in between where I'm going to get, like, so I'm going to work up a sweat, then I'm going to stop, then I'll work up a sweat, I'm going to stop because we need to give the TNT crew some fishing poles, like, and run all the stuff that should have obviously been done in a pregame situation and so that Kevin Hart can have, like, get paid by the word.
Attaboy, Adam Silver.
And I told you, I think there's a chance he saw that bracket and was like, wait, I got to play against Jalen Wells and Keontae George. I'm playing against
21-year-olds.
Well, you would have known that.
Well, no, the matchups were announced before. It wasn't like that was the first round. It wasn't like this was a championship game. So he would have been on that OG scene with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant.
Right. Like, wouldn't he have known that going into this thing? Like, hey, this is the format.
Well, I think he, as he got closer and really started to think about what this visual was going to look like, I think he was like, this is ridiculous. I'm not stepping on the court with those guys. And I kind of don't mind him thinking that. The problem was the attitude he had about the All-Star weekend and All-Star game, coming in street clothes, hat backwards. Hey, you're not going to see nothing from me tonight. Like, he said it with almost disdain with anyone thinking that he would even step on the court. So
here's the thing about LeBron, though. He never delivers those lines well. You know, like anytime he's put on the spots, like, oh, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, like, he's been blowing this. He's been blowing, like, the message, you know, for 2 decades.
Yeah.
He's not good delivering news.
Yeah, like, you know, like,
I am LeBron James.
What was that Key and Peele skit where, like, you had the Obama, like, a translator or whatever? Right. Yeah. Like, he needs, like a, you know, a filter.
Yeah, the anger translator.
Yeah, because, like, LeBron is just saying whatever's to his mind. So they're like, are you going to play tonight? Me play against Jalen Wells? Are you kidding me? Get out of here.
He's like, go back to Cleveland. Oh, surely you jest. Like, it just comes across. He just needs a bit of better delivery.
Speaking of Key and Peele with the Obama stuff, I've got some good stuff next hour with Barack Obama and the NBA.
Love it.
Heck yeah, Pat.
That's called the tease, Manny.
You're a king.
You guys in the room over there?
Yeah, big tap fans around here.
A lot of flirting going on behind this glass.
It's double pane glass. I can feel the steam coming through. Okay, got some good contributions in our chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet and twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. We're asking you which NFL team is facing a do or die offseason. And I'm going to be honest, EJ, someone put a response in here that I had not thought of that I think may top even your and my responses.
Can't wait to hear this one.
We'll do that next. It's Maggie and Perloff. EJ's in for Perloff this week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's the Maggie and Perloff Show. EJ in for Perloff this week. And we've been asking you which NFL team is facing a do-or-die offseason. I went with the San Francisco 49ers, who, when things go bad, go really, really badly. Like, last place in the division, badly.
Yep.
They've got a big Brock Purdy situation to figure out. They already, you know, I don't say if they blew their chance at a championship with him on a rookie deal. Now, they got as close as you could possibly get overtime against the Kansas City Chiefs. So you can't say it's a total waste. But, again, now he's going to have to get paid. You said the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yes. Yeah, the Bengals are your situation where three of your top four players are in massive contract disputes. Two of them are essentially on free agent situations. Now they just tagged Higgins, and that will create a whole level of controversy and level of complications. This is a team where, to me, if you're Joe Burrow, who you've laid out the blueprint of how you get these guys under the salary cap, if the Bengals can't follow it, what comes next? Like, I think you may see a very, very angry Joe Burrow, and I think he's not the kind of guy that's going to just allow the Bengals to let his championship window just slip away.
Yeah, especially as he's watching Mahomes and Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, you know, now Justin Herbert's got Jim Harbaugh, and you'll see what happens with Trevor Lawrence this year and all that. So, those two teams, what I had not thought of, and I credit the chat, Kevin in San Antonio, who, like clockwork, sends us a picture of his breakfast every morning to maggieandperloff@gmail.com. And we love that kind of consistency around here. And it looks delicious. Las Vegas Raiders.
Interesting.
Hadn't thought about it, but I think Kevin's onto something here. Now, he says not microwavable, but let's talk about do or die off seasons. Who's in charge now? Tom Brady. Talk about pressure. I mean, the guy's trying to do it all. Broadcast booth. I actually thought he did have a good Super Bowl. He definitely got better as the season went on.
Sure.
But this is going to, like, you know, light a flame under him that broadcasting really can't do. Broadcasting is competitive, but we're not judged on wins and losses.
Yeah.
You're judged on subjectivity. You know, the best broadcasters of all time, you're going to find someone who hates him.
Sure.
So you're not going to please everyone. But I think for Brady, not only him being in charge and this kind of going on his permanent, like, resume, if you will, the fact that you hired Pete Carroll means you're not messing around. I don't know what you're doing at quarterback, but you're not hiring a 73-year-old coach to build this thing brick by brick.
Right.
So I actually think the Raiders is a good option here. So thank you to Kevin that they have a do-or-die offseason. They got to get better fast.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. I mean, the Raiders have been kind of a dormant franchise for 20 years, and we saw Tom Brady become the minority owner. I don't think a lot of us really knew exactly what that meant. We had guesses of what it meant. Some people thought it meant nothing. Some people thought it meant everything. It started to look more and more like it means everything, and that he is fully invested in trying to rebuild the Raiders. And if that's the case, like you mentioned, a guy like Tom Brady, he's also not sitting here for a 10-year rebuild. He's not, you know, he's someone who wants to see the fruits of his labor happen really quickly.
Yeah, like, guy won a Super Bowl his second year in the league.
Right, yeah, this is someone who's really never, I know he'll say, of course, he dealt with adversity, but he's never really seen real win-loss adversity in terms of missing the playoffs, being a bottom feeder. Like, he never had that in his career. So,
and being a laughing stock.
And being a laughing stock, right. And being an embarrassment. That's not something he's ever dealt with. That is basically what the Raiders, they are fluent in being an embarrassment. They know embarrassment as well as any other sports organization. So it does become do or die purely because of the urgency. You mentioned bringing in Pete Carroll. They're going to do something, I think, pretty big at quarterback, or at least they're going to try. This is not going to be Aiden O'Connell, obviously.
Yeah.
It's going to be either them trading up to get one of these top rookie quarterbacks, and his mentee is Shedeur Sanders, or it's going to be, I think, taking a big swing at one of these veteran guys that may be available.
I think it's going to be a little bit of from column A and column B. You're right about the Shedeur, the comps, and Dion is the one who keeps saying it. My son's like Tom Brady. Yeah. He plays like Tom Brady. I don't know if I necessarily saw that, but it's a little more like Tom Brady than it would be, like a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah, like a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Shador's not running around like that. He's more of a pocket quarterback, so he is a little bit more like Brady. I think they're going to try to kind of manipulate this thing and get him to Las Vegas. And then I also think you get Russell Wilson on a one-year deal.
Okay.
And you bring Russ in, and I think Russ is the mentor also.
You know what's funny about Shedeur Sanders, though? And we talked about Cam Newton saying this, like, I'm too lit to be a backup.
Yeah.
can you
all timeline.
I mean, I know he's a rookie, but could you really, if you're the Las Vegas Raiders and the glitz and glamour and the attention that comes with that organization when you bring star power to it, can you really hold off Shedeur Sanders pushing Russell Wilson to be that starter? Like, and I told you, I didn't think Russell Wilson was going to be the kind of guy that would just be happy to be on the bench either. Like,
right.
That I wonder how tenable that situation would be, where you're talking about Russell Wilson, who's not going to excite anybody in Las Vegas or any Raider fan that Russell Wilson's coming over. They want to see a young guy. They want to see a superstar or guy in his prime. I don't know if you can afford to go into a season Russell Wilson as your QB1 and Shedeur Sanders is dropping podcasts and dropping rap songs and, you know, driving around in Maybachs and Cybertrucks, and people thinking, well, this guy is a superstar, maybe
right.
not on the field, but he's a star personality. Like, can you afford to keep him on the bench?
So this is where I think Brady's got to have the big influence. And I think Russ has enough respect, like, in the building. On the outside, I think we do the Russ is washed and Russ can't win and all of that. But I think in the building, it's a guy who is a future Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yep.
I do think that, you know, we can clown Russ about Mr. Unlimited and all the silly things he does. I think he seems like a pretty model citizen.
Definitely.
Like, he lives his life, I think, in a way. Who knows what the guys are really like, but at least publicly, you know, he could be a good roadmap of how to navigate fame.
Yeah.
For Shedeur. And I think that's where Brady has to step in and say, listen, I don't care if he's got a podcast or he's dropping a rap album. He's going to sit on the bench for a year. I sat on the bench for a year. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes sat on the bench for a year. You're not better than me, and you're not better than Patrick Mahomes. So if I can do it and he can do it, then you can do it. And I think Dion would be on board with that.
But the one thing Brady hasn't dealt with is Bill Belichick was the guy taking those slings and arrows with questions about personnel.
Yeah.
It never, you know, Brady, ironically, being in New England, and even though he was Tom Brady, we really didn't go to Tom Brady with, like, what do you think should happen with the Patriots? Either that or the media was scared because they felt like Bill would maybe get to him and be like, hey, those are my questions, and I'm going to tell you nothing because
I'm not
going to
tell you
anything.
Yeah, well, Brady could just say, he's the art of saying nothing.
Right, and Brady really lived by the Patriot way. He's not in New England anymore. There is no shielding from questions about what to do with quarterback, what to do with any personnel situation. So,
well, that's Brady, where Pete Carroll comes in too, though.
But he's Pete Carroll's boss.
Like, Pete Carroll has the gravitas where he could take those questions and I think handle them. It's not like you got a first-time coach in there who could flub this like Robert Sala would have.
I guess, but Tom Brady is not necessarily also, you know, hiding behind, you know, in anonymity right now. He's a freaking, you know, broadcaster. So he's going to be doing podcasts, interviews. People are going to be asking about this stuff.
Coming up, a surprise quarterback for the Steelers?
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.